Today is Friday, July 3rd, 2026. And, you know, if you're listening to this right now, I really need you to pull up your calendar, look at next week, and realize that the entire landscape of your operations is about to shift.
Oh, completely. It is a profound operational shift.
Because in exactly 5 days, so Wednesday, July 8th, 2026, the fundamental rules of cross-border trade between Canada and the United States are changing permanently.
Right. And the grace period is just gone. The window to prepare is literally measured in hours now.
Yeah.
And a lot of supply chains are basically driving straight toward a brick wall without even touching the brakes.
Which is exactly why we're doing this deep dive today. We went through the definitive guide to the U.S. CPSC e-filing mandate for cross-border shippers. Mm. And our mission right now is to pull the exact actionable blueprint you need out of this source material.
Mm-hmm. To give you the actual operational reality.
Exactly. So your freight actually clears customs next Wednesday. So let's establish the reality of what's happening. In the past, border compliance for consumer goods was, well, it was reactive.
Right, highly reactive.
It was like carrying your driver's license in your wallet. You had your GCC or your CPC, you know, tucked away in a filing cabinet or a shared drive somewhere.
Yeah, and you only ever produced it if an auditor literally pulled you over and asked for it.
Right, but starting July 8th, it is fundamentally different. It's like having a digital transponder bolted to your windshield.
That's a great way to put it.
It communicates with the toll booth miles before you arrive. And if the system doesn't read pre-approved data, the concrete barricades stay up. You don't even get on the highway.
Exactly. The era of, you know, available upon request is officially dead.
Wow.
What we're really looking at is a transition from this sleepy back office document review into a highly aggressive real-time data governance process.
Because the CPSC and CBP have merged their enforcement.
Right, exactly. So having the testing documents in your physical possession is no longer enough to satisfy your legal obligation.
Right, you have to prove it beforehand.
Yes. Providing the underlying data in real-time is now an absolute hard-coded condition of entry.
So, I mean, it's a fully automated digital blockade.
It really is. Before your driver even reaches the physical port of entry, like at the Ambassador Bridge or the Peace Arch, there's a real-time automated risk assessment happening in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And if your data pipeline fails to feed the system, the physical gates simply do not open.
Okay, let's unpack the actual mechanics of that blockade. Because the guide spends a lot of time breaking down this revised 16 CFR Part 1110 framework.
Right.
If I'm, say, shipping LTL freight into the U.S. next week, how does this invisible digital border actually execute the block?
Well, to understand the mechanism, you really have to look at how CBP's ACE system is now interacting with the PGA message set.
Okay, ACE being the main custom system.
Right, ACE is essentially the master switchboard at the border.
Mm-hmm.
And the CPSC is plugging their specific safety mandates directly into that switchboard.
Through the PGA message set.
Exactly.
Right, so the CPSC is effectively borrowing CBP's infrastructure to enforce their own rules.
Precisely. And the trigger for that enforcement, it relies really heavily on HTS codes.
Okay, the tariff codes.
Yeah. As your broker files the entry data, the ACE system automatically scans the shipment's HTS codes. The CBSC has provided this sweeping list of HTS codes that correlate to regulated consumer products.
Right.
So if your product's classification matches anything on their tracking list, ACE triggers an immediate automated flag.
And what happens then?
At that exact millisecond, the system actively blocks your entry from clearing until the mandatory CPSC compliance data fields are populated within that PGA message set.
Okay, let me stop you right there because I can already see the loophole a lot of people are going to try and jump through here.
Oh, you know where you're going with this.
Right. If the ACE system relies on matching HTS codes to trigger the flag, what if my product's HTS code isn't on the CPSC's list? If the system doesn't flag me, I just sail right through, right? Problem solved.
That is, without a doubt, the most dangerous trap in this entire mandate.
Yeah.
Yes. The source guide actually dedicates a bolded crucial compliance note to this exact scenario. If you attempt to operate under the assumption that an unflagged HTS code equals legal immunity, you are going to get burned.
But if the computer doesn't explicitly ask for the data?
The computer's failure to ask does not absolve you of the legal requirement to report.
Wow. Okay.
The CPSC's HTS guidance list is just a diagnostic tool for their algorithms. It is absolutely not an exhaustive legal shield for you, the importer.
So you're still on the hook.
100% legally responsible for determining if your products are subject to safety standards. If your product is regulated by law, but the specific HTS code you used didn't trigger an automatic flag in ACE, you are still legally bound to file that data.
Oh, wow. So ignorance isn't just a poor excuse. It's a direct compliance violation.
Yeah.
I can't just throw your hands up and say, well, ACE didn't prompt my broker. If it's a regulated good, the burden is entirely on you to push the data. You can't just wait for the system to pull it.
Relying solely on automated flags to dictate your compliance strategy is a massive legal liability. This forces a complete shift in posture. You have to aggressively self-audit.
Which means we need to talk about who is actually in the crosshairs here. If the HTS flag won't save you, you have to look at your entire warehouse inventory right now and figure out what falls under CPSC jurisdiction.
Right.
Where is the line actually drawn?
The foundational rule of thumb is that this mandate targets finished consumer products.
Okay.
So if you're moving raw materials like bulk lumber, untreated steel, industrial resins, or, you know, unfinished components destined for a B2B manufacturing facility, you are generally outside the scope of this specific e-filing rule.
Right, because a regular consumer isn't buying a giant pallet of industrial resin, but there has to be a gray area, right?
Oh, there is. The gray area is marketing intent.
Ah.
If you take those raw industrial components or commercial grade materials and you market them directly to consumers as standalone products, the jurisdiction completely flips.
Really? Just based on marketing?
Yes. The moment it is reasonably intended for a consumer's household use, it falls under the CPSC's umbrella, and you are subject to the mandate.
Okay, so assuming we are dealing with finished consumer goods, the guide segments the compliance into two distinct branches, the CPC and the GCC.
Yes. So the CPC is the Children's Product Certificate.
All right.
And the definition here is very strict. It's any product designed or intended primarily for children 12 years of age or younger.
So we're talking toys, strollers, cribs, bunk beds.
Children's apparel, exactly. And because of that vulnerable demographic, the CPC requires rigorous, mandatory third-party testing. You absolutely cannot self-certify.
It has to be an independent lab.
Yes, the testing must be conducted by a laboratory that is specifically accredited and accepted by the CPSC.
Okay, and the other branch is the GCC.
The General Certificate of Conformity. This covers general use, non-children's products that are still subject to specific consumer product safety rules.
General use covers a lot of ground, though. What actually gets caught in that net?
It's extremely expansive.
Yeah.
Adult sleepwear, specialized outerwear, carpets, mattresses, bicycle helmets, fitness equipment, even architectural glass.
Wow.
Yeah, if the federal government has placed a specific flammability standard, a chemical restriction, or a mechanical impact rule on the item, you need a GCC to move it across the border.
But the friction to get a GCC is lower than a CPC.
Right. You don't necessarily have to use an external accredited laboratory for a GCC, though a lot of companies still do, just to mitigate their risk.
Makes sense.
The law does allow a GCC to be supported by a, quote, reasonable testing program, managed directly by the manufacturer, provided you maintain rigorous, documented proof of that testing.
Okay, so it's basically the difference between getting a prescription drug versus an over-the-counter medication.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
Yeah. For the CPC, the children's products, you absolutely need the doctor, the authorized third-party lab, to sign the prescription. No exceptions. But for the GCC, a heavily documented home remedy testing program can suffice, as long as you have the raw data to prove it works, if someone comes knocking.
Exactly. Taking that analogy a little further, though, just because it's over-the-counter doesn't mean it's unregulated. The liability is still massive.
Yeah, that's fair.
And frankly, determining which specific bucket your product falls into and then mapping out the exact federal safety citations attached to it,
yeah,
it's a very complex matrix.
I can imagine.
If you're producing an item with novel materials or a product that kind of walks the line between a general use item and a children's toy, guessing is just not a viable strategy.
Especially when guessing wrong means your freight gets seized. So how does an importer actually figure this out without hiring, you know, a whole team of regulatory lawyers?
Well, the CPSC actually built a highly effective diagnostic tool for this exact problem. It's called the regulatory robot.
The regulatory robot.
I know. Despite the name, it is a critical piece of software for cross-border shippers.
What does it do?
It's an interactive portal where you input the granular details of your product. So the material composition, the intended user demographics, the functional design.
Okay.
And then it runs that profile against their entire regulatory database. It generates this baseline report detailing the exact federal safety standards, the specific testing rules, and the precise type of certificate your product requires to clear customs.
Okay, so let's put this into a real-world scenario. Let's say I run the regulatory robot. I find out my new line of adult sleepwear requires a GCC for flammability standards.
Okay, perfect.
I have my testing documents organized. Now we arrive at the actual July 8th reality. What specific data am I required to push to the U.S. government through ACE for every single shipment?
This is where we get into the full PGA message set protocol. Mm-hmm. If your shipment contains regulated products, you are now legally required to provide 7 mandatory data fields electronically filed for every single entry.
Okay, walk me through the 7 fields. What exactly are they extracting from us?
First is the product identifier. This must be a highly specific, unique alphanumeric ID.
Like a barcode.
Yeah, a GTIN, a SKU, a UPC, or a distinct model number. They need to know the exact physical iteration of the item in that box.
Okay, simple enough. What's number 2?
Second, the applicable safety rules. And you can't just say it's safe. You have to list the specific alphanumeric CESC citations and federal rules you are certifying compliance against.
So the exact legal codes. Got it. Third.
Third is the date and place of manufacture. They require the exact month and year of production and the precise geographic location, city, state, and country of the factory that produced it.
Okay.
Fourth is the date and place of testing. So the exact date the safety tests were concluded and the location.
Right. And fifth?
Fifth is the testing laboratory information.
Let me guess. They want more than just the name of the lab.
Oh, much more. They want the legal entity name, full physical mailing address, email, and a direct phone number.
Wow.
And crucially, under this revised mandate, if you are relying on any specific testing exemptions or exclusions allowed by law for that product, you have to explicitly declare them right in this field.
Okay, that's 5. What's 6?
6 is the records custodian contact information. This is the individual within your organization who holds the actual raw test reports. So name, address, email, phone number.
Okay, and the last one.
And 7th is the certifying party information. This is the business entity details of the importer of record who is formally attesting under penalty of law that all of this data is accurate.
Okay, I have to be honest here. I'm looking at these 7 fields, and it really doesn't sound like a massive operational hurdle.
No.
I mean, I fill out 7 fields just to buy a pair of shoes online. Name, address, credit card, expiry, security code. It's just basic data entry. Why is the industry panicking over 7 fields?
Because you're thinking about this as a single transaction. You really need to think about scale, and you need to think about the environment where this data entry is actually happening.
Okay, explain that.
Yes. Filling out 7 fields for 1 SKU is totally trivial. Now, put yourself in the shoes of a 3PL or a customs broker processing a mixed LTL shipment.
Oh, less than truckload.
Okay, right. You have a single trailer hitting the border carrying a mixed pallet of apparel. Mm-hmm. There are 400 distinct variations on that pallet.
400?
Yes. Different SKUs, different colors, different sizes, manufactured in different batches across 3 different facilities in Vietnam and Bangladesh.
Ah, I see. The multiplier effect.
Exactly. You do not file those 7 fields once for the truck. You are required to input those 7 distinct fields perfectly for every single variation.
Oh, man.
That is 2,800 individual data points that have to be keyed into the PGA message set. And here is the brutal reality of an automated system. There is no human discretion at the border anymore.
What happens if there's a mistake?
If your broker makes a single typographical error, like if they invert 2 digits on the records custodian's phone number on line item number 399, the ACE system does not ask for clarification. It automatically rejects the entire shipment.
Wait. If there's a typo on one SKU, it kicks back the entire truck.
Yes. The entry is completely rejected.
That isn't just a bottleneck. That is a total operational nightmare. I mean, if I'm paying a broker to manually type out a data encyclopedia at the border for hundreds of SKUs, my freight isn't moving.
Not at all.
It's just sitting there while a clerk tries to find a missing digit. There has to be a mechanism to bypass that manual data entry trap.
There is. And the guide actually outlines 2 distinct pathways to handle this data transmission.
Yeah.
What we just described, that grueling process of typing everything into the PGA message set at the time of entry, that is pathway A.
Okay, the full data submission route.
Correct. The importer or their broker inputs all 7 elements manually every single time a shipment is dispatched.
That sounds terrible. Is there any benefit to it?
The only marginal benefit to pathway A is that you don't have to register an account with the CPSC up front, but the operational tax is catastrophic.
Yeah, I bet.
The administrative burden is immense. The broker fees will skyrocket due to the time required, and the risk of automated rejection due to human error is terrifyingly high.
So pathway A is basically the equivalent of manually typing in your 16-digit credit card number, your expiration date, your security code, and your full billing address every single time you want to buy a cup of coffee.
That is exactly what it is.
Yes, the transaction eventually goes through, but the friction makes it completely unsustainable. So what is Pathway B?
Well, keeping with your exact analogy, Pathway B is setting up Apple Pay.
Oh, I like that.
It is called product registry and reference filing. And frankly, it is the only viable route for any business moving real volume across the border.
So how does the architecture of Pathway B actually work?
Instead of forcing your broker to type out data while the truck is literally idling, you utilize a secure online portal called the CPSC Product Registry.
Okay.
You preload and centralize all seven of those mandatory data elements for your entire product catalog into the government's database ahead of time. You do the heavy lifting from your office in a controlled environment long before the freight is ever staged for transit.
So you build the data profile in their cloud, and it just sits there waiting.
Precisely. And when you register a product in that database, the system generates two critical keys for you.
Wow.
A unique certifier ID and a certificate identifier.
Okay, so when my truck actually hits the Ambassador Bridge next Wednesday, what is my broker doing differently?
They aren't filing the full seven elements. When it's time to clear customs, your broker files an abbreviated reference PGA message set containing just three highly simplified fields.
Just three.
Just three. The unique product ID, your pre-registered certifier ID, and that specific certificate identifier.
Wow. So they only transmit three alphanumeric codes instead of thousands of data points.
Exactly. The ACE system reads those three codes, authenticates them, reaches directly into the CPSC product registry via API, and automatically pulls the verified data right into the entry file.
That is incredible.
It entirely eliminates the manual data entry errors at the border. It drastically reduces the documentation your broker has to manage, and it accelerates the automated clearance process to milliseconds.
Okay, it's a massive operational advantage. Pathway B is clearly the only logical choice.
No question.
But we have to address the elephant in the room here. There are always shippers who hear about a new government mandate and assume it's just noise.
Oh.
They assume there will be a soft rollout or maybe a 6-month grace period, or that customs won't actually drop the hammer on day one. So what is the actual cost of complacency? What happens on July 8th to the supply chains that ignore this and try to push freight through with missing data?
CBP and the CPSC have been incredibly transparent about their posture on this. Enforcement is strict and immediate.
No grace period.
There is no soft rollout. If your PGA message set is incomplete, missing, or inaccurate on July 8th, your shipment is instantly flagged as high risk. And the cascading consequences of that high-risk flag are just devastating.
We're talking immediate physical delays, right?
Prolonged, agonizing shipment holds. Mm. Remember the transponder analogy?
Yeah.
If you try to ram the gate without the digital transponder, you don't just get a warning ticket. Your cargo gets impounded. If the automated flag is triggered, the CPSC issues a physical hold. And border examinations by the CPSC are not quick visual checks.
How long do they take?
They routinely take days, and in complex cases where critical data like lab testing info is missing, your cargo can be detained for up to 60 days.
60 days! A 60-day impound for a seasonal shipment. I mean, if I'm shipping back-to-school apparel or winter gear and it gets locked up for 2 months, that inventory is functionally worthless by the time it clears.
Exactly.
It could bankrupt a mid-sized brand.
And the financial bleeding doesn't stop at lost sales. Unlike a small parcel that can sit quietly on a shelf somewhere, commercial freight cannot sit indefinitely at a port without incurring astronomical logistics penalties.
Right, storage fees.
Exactly. You, the importer, will be held fully liable for all storage fees, demurrage, cargo manipulation fees, and bonded warehousing costs while your shipment is stuck in regulatory limbo.
That adds up fast.
For a 60-day hold, those fees can easily eclipse the total retail value of the goods inside the trailer.
It's a total margin wipeout. But let's say the absolute worst happens. You get hit with the hold, you bleed cash, paying the demurrage fees, you finally scramble and get the testing data to the broker, and the goods are released. It was a brutal, expensive lesson, but you survive and move on, right?
Well, that is the second dangerous misconception. You don't just move on.
What do you mean?
This mandate introduces a long-term scarring effect through elevated importer risk scores.
Oh, no.
Every single compliance failure, every missing data field, every typo that triggers a hold feeds back into the algorithm and directly degrades your business's permanent risk profile with U.S. Customs.
Wait, so this isn't an isolated penalty. A data entry error on Wednesday permanently damages my operational reputation with the U.S. government.
Yes. Your risk score dictates your friction at the border. If you degrade that profile, you are systematically painting a target on your own back for the future. A higher risk score means your future shipments, even the ones where you do everything perfectly, will be subjected to significantly more frequent audits, intensive physical exams, and systematic delays for years to come.
So it's a permanent record that just compounds your logistics costs forever.
And that is all in addition to the immediate statutory penalties. If the investigation reveals you presented false compliance statements or, say, claimed a GCC without an actual testing program backing it up, you are facing severe civil penalties, potential criminal liability, absolute product seizures, or mandatory public recalls.
The stakes are existential. The era of "we'll figure it out if they ask" is entirely over.
Completely over.
It is time to get aggressively proactive. Based on everything we've decoded here, let's crystallize the operational roadmap. If I am a cross-border shipper, what is the exact sequence of actions I need to execute between right now and July 8th?
Okay. Step one is the internal audit. You need to look at your entire catalog today. Cross-reference your inventory against the CPSC regulations and the HES tracking lists.
Use the tool you mentioned.
Yes. Isolate every single STQ that requires a CPC or AGCC. Use the regulatory robot. Establish exactly what you are legally required to prove.
Step two has to be securing the proof.
Exactly. Engage your upstream supply chain immediately. You need the exact manufacturing dates, the facility locations, and the raw test reports.
And if a supplier is dragging their feet...
If you have a Tier 2 supplier in Asia who is notoriously slow at providing documentation, you need to apply intense pressure right now. You cannot file the data if you don't possess it.
Right. Step three is building the infrastructure.
Establish your CPSC product registry account. Do not wait for the freight to be loaded on Wednesday. Build the account, start migrating your certificate data into their cloud, and generate those certifier IDs. You really need to set up pathway B to survive the scale of this data requirement.
And the final piece is the broker.
Coordinate your data transmission protocols with your customs broker today. They are legally prohibited from guessing your data or certifying products on your behalf.
Right, they can't just fix it for you.
No, they need to know exactly how you will pass those three pathway B alphanumeric codes to them for every single shipment. The communication loop must be flawless.
Absolute precision across the entire chain. So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to pull back and look at what this mandate actually signals for the industry.
Okay.
We spent this entire time talking about logistics, about trucks moving physical boxes across a geographic border. But the reality is, the physical movement is now entirely subordinate to the automated data checks happening in the cloud.
That is the true paradigm shift here. We are entering an era where a product's digital data profile is scrutinized with far more intensity than the physical object itself.
That's wild.
The architecture of the border cares more about the cryptographic verification of your lab data than it does about the cardboard and the tape.
Which leads to a fascinating and honestly slightly terrifying implication about where this goes next. If the U.S. government has successfully built an interlocking AI border system that actively blocks freight based on real-time API data, I mean, they've effectively proven the concept, how long until this creates a domino effect?
Oh, it's highly probable.
Right. If Washington can demand real-time transparency deep into your supply chain, why wouldn't Canada, the EU, or Mexico demand the exact same API access?
They absolutely will.
We could be looking at the end of private supply chain data globally. Imagine a synchronized global data net where a single safety flag raised on a factory in Vietnam instantly and automatically blocks your shipments in Rotterdam, Toronto, and Los Angeles simultaneously.
All without a human ever touching a keyboard.
Exactly.
It forces every shipper to realize that their IT infrastructure, their data pipelines, and their API integrations are now just as critical to moving freight as the combustion engines in their trucks.
It's a wild thought. The future of global logistics isn't going to be won by the company with the fastest trucks. It's going to be won by the company with the cleanest data.
Absolutely.
Remember that digital transponder we talked about? Make sure your system is fully loaded, perfectly accurate, and ready to transmit by July 8th. Because the invisible border doesn't care about your excuses. It only cares about your data. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.